Hey, everybody. Welcome to Barca Talk. I'm Brian Henderson, coming at you from my tiny apartment in Buffalo, New York. And joining me from his tiny apartment in Madrid, Spain, is Gabriel Quiroga.
Brian, my married brother from another mother. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm a married man. Doing pretty awesome.
Yes. Congratulations on getting that done. So tell us, you know, I thought it was kind of a surprise, and I think some other people may think it's a surprise. So, you know, if you care to share some of the details, we are eager to listen here.
It was a big surprise for most people. My family knew ahead of time that it was going to happen, and some of our closer friends. But yeah, otherwise, it was pretty much a big shock. So a couple weeks ago, or last week on the podcast, I talked about this. Megan, my then girlfriend, had to go to the ER. And we'd been talking about getting married for at least a year, maybe two. We've been together for, you know, about 4 years. And, four plus, actually. And so, you know, we've been talking about getting married eventually, but we had been kind of waiting. There was, like, money things we were worried about. And then she was in the ER. And she's fine, by the way. We're not entirely sure whether she had a seizure or whether it was just some kind of weird acid reflux, ulcery kind of thing. But she's been to the doctor, was working on that. But in any case, you know, we're sitting there in the ER, and I just decided that I didn't want to wait any longer to be married to her. So I proposed to her right there in the emergency room while she's laying in the bed. And she was excited by it. She was down for it. And I would have completely understood if she said that she wanted to wait, but she was with me on that. And so we went to City Hall here in Buffalo the next week, got our marriage license. And then a week later, just because of scheduling with City Hall, we had to wait another week to do the ceremony. We would have done it sooner. But then, yeah, that was last Thursday. And so we just posted it on our Facebook pages and stuff. And yeah, most of the responses were total surprise, including yours. Just total shock. Now she's my wife, and it's awesome.
Yeah, well, congratulations. I mean, you know, we've just become friends over the summer doing this podcast. So, you know, obviously, you know, we become, I think, more and more better friends. But yeah, it was a complete shock. But at the same time, it didn't really surprise me that much, especially since you have been going out for so long. So I'm sure it was bound to happen. So congratulations from over here in Madrid.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. So what's going on with you? You have curtains in your apartment.
I do. You know, we talked last week briefly that I went to IKEA, the worldwide leader in tiny furniture for tiny apartments, you know? And so I went to IKEA, got some ideas, and slowly but surely I've been putting together my apartment here. It's been taking longer than usual, but it's coming around. And so hopefully, you know, by January, I'll have a fully functional family room / home office / podcast recording center. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm definitely excited for the progress and where it's going, because I do work at home majority of the time. So it's important to have obviously a comfortable living space. And also, you know, when you have, you know, other human beings over, you know, you don't want them to sit on the floor, you know, so you want to, you know, be comfortable. And so, so slowly and surely just kind of putting things together. So really excited to what's the progress. And I will be painting the apartment in 2 weekends. So yeah, I'm adulting here.
Yeah, you're really making it your own.
Correct. I'm going to paint it blue and red, the colors of Barca. What do you think?
I think that's an awesome thing to do to an apartment in Madrid. I think that's like one of the best trolls you could possibly make.
Correct. And then the other thing too is I'm going to get a big fat head of like someone on the team and just post it as my art, you know, like just do something like that.
As soon as you walk in the door.
Correct. Like in the hallway.
And not even messy, because like someone could even be okay with that, but just some really off.
I have a better idea. My hallway is pretty, you know, pretty long, nice space to put these fat heads. I could put like 4 fat heads of like the wall of shame, like the worst signings that in Barca's history, you know, like have that as my wall of shame, Barca signings, fat head hallway entrance.
I don't know. I think you might have to get custom fat heads made of those players.
Oh, you can. What you do is you just take a picture, you upload it, and they send it to you. It's pretty amazing. Oh yeah. Because you can also get fat heads of professional, you know, professional sports people, but you can also get fatheads of yourself. So, yeah, you can like get your own fathead, which is both scary and interesting.
Well, when we open the Barca Talk merch shop, I think we should definitely have fatheads of you and I available in the Barca Talk merch store.
There you go. I like that. We can do like a funny fathead, like, you know, I don't know if you remember the show Fantasy Island. I could be like the midget guy on your lap with that face, and you can be like the Ricardo Montalban guy.
Tattoo.
Exactly. And we just have like the Barca scudo like on the front or something like that. I think that would sell like hotcakes.
Oh, man. I have to apologize to our younger listeners, because we are definitely pulling out some early to mid 80s deep cut references lately, like Fantasy Island, the original with Ricardo Montalban and correct. His rich Corinthian leather.
Correct. Correct.
I used to love just the opening to Fantasy Island was so great. Just when Tattoo would just yell out, "De plane, boss, de plane."
Exactly.
That's all it was for me.
Correct.
The rest of the show I could give two shits about.
Yeah, the play.
But anyway, let's talk about the show a little bit, what's going on with the show. Actually, not a whole lot of news to report, because we have been accepted on Spotify. They have allowed us to distribute the podcast on Spotify. But at the moment, we are still not on Spotify. We are apparently only going to be in 23 countries. But that will include, you know, your big players, the U.S., the U.K., Germany, Sweden, home of IKEA. And I don't know what all countries. So I know that we have a big following in Denmark. I'm not sure if we're going to be available on Spotify in Denmark, but that is in the works. And we've been both frantically checking our Spotify apps every day, 10 to 20 times a day, to see if the podcast has shown up on Spotify yet. And it's still has not. They gave us kind of a time frame, and this coming week is when it should be up. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Although we've agreed that if we don't show up on Spotify by like Tuesday, a very strongly worded email will be written.
Correct. Remember we talked about last time, they're like the equivalent of the cable guy. They're like, "Oh, your podcast will be on there between now and 2 weeks, between the hours of this and this," like no real kind of destination date. And like you said, I've been checking frantically because, you know, I feel like it's a big step in our podcasting career to be on Spotify, you know, and I want this to happen, you know, so I can show family and friends that I've amounted to something in the last 4 months. And so I've been checking frantically, and hopefully by this week we will be on Spotify.
Yeah. So if you're using Spotify, keep your eyes peeled for Barca Talk there this coming week. According to what they've told us, we should probably appear this week, but you know, of course, we can't make any guarantees, because Spotify is, we can't even get in touch with the people there. We have to go through the intermediary of our hosting service, Libsyn, which are great. They're all great and responsive people. Libsyn is awesome, and I love using them for hosting the podcast. But yeah, everything concerning Spotify goes through Libsyn. I can't even get in touch with a person at Spotify. But anyway, this is some behind-the-scenes stuff, just kind of keeping you informed as to what's going on with the show. But we don't want to belabor it too much. Now, I do also want to point out that if you didn't listen to last week's episode, you should, because we did a really good feature on the 92 Dream Team, and it was excellent. So that's episode 52, Reliving the Dream Team. That's the name of the episode. Anytime that there's an international break, you know, we're a little bit wanting for content or, you know, ways to fill out the show. So we like to do these feature stories. And I have to say, this was, I think, one of our best ones. And of course, at the same time, those weeks following international breaks where there wasn't Barca games to talk about, we tend to have fewer people listening to the episode. So I just want to let you know that that was a really good episode. And if nothing else, you should listen to the feature on the 92 Dream Team. So go back and listen to that.
Yeah, I mean, I had a really good time putting that together and talking about that. I think it's really important to know the history of the Dream Team, because that's really what the blueprint of Barcelona is now. So I really had a good time looking at all the videos and so forth. And of course, your favorite video, the rap video that we put on the Facebook page. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. I mean, could that be the dream team of sports rap videos? I don't know. You know, that with the 85 Bears, Bear Shuffle, and some other teams. But it is pretty epic rap, because it's such a crappy song. So, but that video, that video was amazing, and I can't stop watching it. Like, I put it on the Facebook page, and I watched it probably like 100 times already because it is a little catchy, you know, like the beat of it. But then, like, the lyrics of it are so, I mean, like a 12-year-old, right? It's like, what rhymes with Bar? Like, I put this on there. What rhymes with Barca? Barca. That's what rhymes with Barca. It's like that.
It's like orange. Nothing rhymes with it except itself.
Exactly.
I don't know, man. I think Baquero had some flow.
Which was – what was flowing more, his hair or his rhymes?
It's a close one. That is a tight race.
Correct. That is like, that is some – that's a mullet hall of fame, you know?
Yeah. Now, okay, let me just put on my music nerd hat for just 1 second. So on that song, that rap song, my favorite moment is when there's a – it's a sampled keyboard, and it's – the sample they're using is kind of like – someone going, huh. And so there's this great moment during, there's like a break between verses, and you just hear, huh. I wish I could do it as well, because it has all the, like, the clean attack of each key. Anyway, that's my favorite moment in the song. But yeah, go check that out on our Facebook page, and go back and listen to episode 52 for that feature on the Dream Team. It was fantastic. But let's get into some Barca news and notes. There are two main things that we're going to talk about in this news and notes section today. The first one, this is kind of a big blow, I think. Mascherano was injured. So he tore the muscles in his right leg during the Argentina friendly with Nigeria, and he's going to be out for a month. So my initial thought on this is that while Mache is not the starter that he used to be, because now we have Monsieur Umtiti holding down the center, this is still, I think, a pretty bad blow to the back line with all the matches coming up.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, it's crazy. Like, what muscles did he tear, you know? Like, I tore my calf muscle playing soccer, football, and I was out 6 months, and it was, like, one of the most painful things I've ever had. And he just, like, it's, you know, you have in the notes, tore muscles. Like, what? Like,
Know which one specifically. I kind of dumbed it down, actually, for the podcast. But if you want to know specifically, I'll tell you exactly what he tore.
Okay, so tell me.
He had a fibrillar tear in the femoral biceps of his right leg.
Okay, so his hamstrings.
Sure.
I don't know if you know, Brian, I studied sports science, so I know these type of things. But yeah,
did you really?
Yeah, I did. I studied kinesiology at the Arizona State University. Thank you very much. Nice. But yeah, that's your hamstring, right? So he tore obviously some muscles in there. So obviously it's a minor tear, so it's not so major that he's going to be out for so long, but still 1 month. And especially what happened yesterday's game with PK getting the yellow card, he's not going to be available for the Valencia game. That hurts us, not having Mascherano. And of course, we're going to have to use Vermaelen most likely in the game, unless Valgreen comes up with some crazy formation. But we have some tough games coming up, and we need that depth, not only for to give some rotation, some rest, but Mascherano is a key, you know, especially in these tough games. We don't know with injury and cards. So it is a definite blow, especially, you know, he can play defensive mid or he can play back on the back line. So hopefully he'll come back sooner than later, and we'll see how his recovery is.
I think maybe against Valencia, he might even Valgreen might even opt for no, he's not going to do this. I wish he would, though, just so that Vermaelen doesn't play. But if he just lines up a 3-4-3 with Umtiti as the lone center back, and then you know, have Busquets just like drop back when he needs to for support.
I mean, you never know, right? I mean, he could alter the tactics, but the like you said, against Valencia, at Valencia, I would not try to do that formation. I would try to be way more conservative. Maybe have Paulinho to help with the physicality in the center and something, you know, I don't know, something like that. But, you know, this is not good news right now, especially with PK getting the yellow card yesterday and also just with our lack of depth at center back.
Yeah. Now, here is some good news, in my opinion. Well, it's good news for me. So this is our next little news item. Xabi, my number one Barca player of all time, is on the verge of retiring and getting his coaching badges. He told Sport this last week that this will surely be his last year as a footballer, and he plans to get his coaching badges next year and move into the next stage in his career. And I have to tell you, I have been waiting, hoping for this news to come down ever since starting the show. You know, we're still a long way off from seeing him back at Barcelona coaching. Maybe it just won't happen. Who knows? But this is a huge first step. And I hope that within a few years, he's managing Barca B and then on to the first team. Because as you know, my top five Barcelona players of all time are Xavi, 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 and Xavi.
I mean, that's really good news. And I'm going to use this quote. Badges? We don't need no stinking badges.
Man, again, pulling out the deep cut.
No, this is really great news because, again, Xavi is basically, you know, he's like, he knows exactly what the Barca style is, the culture, everything that goes along with it. And so him getting coaching badges to hopefully further his career and be a coach and be back at Barca B, it's a great thing. So all this news is really great, especially, you know, for the future. I could totally see him coaching the Barca B team and eventually the senior team down the line because, you know, he's the captain, right? And usually captains can kind of translate that to being a coach because not only were they able to manage the team on the field, but they also have a unique perspective. So I think his unique qualities will help him to be a really great coach down the line. Just like Pep Guardiola. Like Pep Guardiola had that special quality characteristic of being a captain, you know, being the director of the team on the field. I think that's a really unique talent to have to manage those 11 on the field to get that respect that automatically as a coach, you know, he's won so many things. You know, it's very similar to what happened with Zidane with Real Madrid. Like when he became the manager, he automatically gained respect at that locker room. First of all, because A, he was such a great player and won so many trophies, but also they realized his tactics and the way he could manage the team. And so everyone followed suit. I mean, you see Ronaldo automatically was able to follow suit with Zidane. So hopefully Xavi will have the same effect down the line with any Barca team that he coaches.
Yeah, and I think he absolutely will because not only was he a great captain and a great player, but he, as I understand it, is a real student of the game and he has a very tactical, strategic kind of mind. So I think he'll be very well suited to it. And yeah, since he's like my ultimate Barca hero, I don't think anything could make me happier. I just hope that if he does eventually get the job, you know, that it doesn't destroy him as that job can often do to people. But anyway, we'll, you know, as the years go by, we'll see how that story develops. For now, he's still playing in Qatar and he's going to finish out the season and then we'll see what happens. Let's move on to our listener comments. We actually got a lot of great comments this week, and these are just some. We're going to pick up some more later on when we're actually talking about the Leganés match. This first one is actually kind of an old one. Somehow we overlooked this message from a couple weeks ago, but it's still relevant. So we wanted to read this message from Victor. He got in touch with us on Facebook, and he sent this just after the match against Olympiacos in the Champions League. And we had said that the draw they got was sufficient to get them to finish at the top of Group D, but Victor had another take on it. He said that even before this match, I would have challenged the importance of a better result in Athens. That is, there is still a scenario where we don't qualify in the top spot in Group D. Should we lose in Italy, we can't underestimate a Juve side in their home, and should we tie at home versus Sporting and Juve win their final match, we are number two. And then he also says, he goes on to say, let's talk about the week of away hell, which is actually what we just started. He says, we play Leganés away, Juve away, and cap it all off with a very scary good Valencia away, all in 1 week's time. We really needed to not have to worry about Juve this week. Now, following the tie with Olympiacos, we just made that away week that much more difficult. My point, Olympiacos was an important match. So all really good points, Victor. Thank you for that. And again, sorry we somehow like overlooked it. But again, I still think it's really pertinent. And, you know, I'll be honest. I hadn't taken all of the factors that Victor mentions into my assessment of how important that Olympiacos match was. You know, the scenario he lays out is entirely possible. He makes a good point that you can't underestimate Juve on their home field. Although, while Sporting are tough, I'd say it's less likely that they'll draw in the Camp Nou. But, you know, we have all these complicating factors of the away games and these injuries, and maybe that might be enough.
Yeah, I mean, those are some good points, but I still think we should be okay with the with being the leader of the table. I think, especially with the victory yesterday in Leganés, that starts us off in a good start. It was a difficult match. You know, like I said in my, I think on Twitter or something, that the 4 o'clock kickoff times here are super, super difficult because 4 o'clock here in Spain is like 9 a.m. in the rest of the world. It's like really early. Like, it's funny like that. So that's, they were able to get the victory with that. Then the second thing, the Juve game that's coming up, I think they'll be definitely motivated. They'll be concentrated. I think they'll be focused for that game, especially what happened last year. But also they're going to have a good amount of rest between these games, right? So they played Saturday. They didn't have to travel too far, just to Madrid. Then they're going to travel to Juventus. Then again, Valencia. Now, the only thing that's difficult for me to look at with the Valencia game is, like we pointed out with the Mascherano injury, is not having PK available. So I think that's going to be more difficult than the Juve game for me. So Victor brought up some really good points, but I think still that we should be okay. Like you said, I think we should be able to get this, the victory against Sporting, and be okay with that. I mean, it's a really you know, iffy scenario for a lot of things to happen. Not saying that it's not from being impossible, but I think that the it's more favorable for Barca to be still top of the table in the Champions.
Yeah, but I think the main point that he's getting at is that the Olympiacos match was maybe a little bit more important than we had given credit for. And yeah, I recognize that. But you know, we drew. It happened. It is what it is. And now moving forward, I still think that we're in a good position. It's going to be a little bit tougher maybe. But yeah, I think we can still come out at the top of that group.
I mean, on paper, we should have won, right? And the thing is, we can't win every game. And so getting a tie over there is still really a great result. And, you know, there's, again, they're playing so many games. It's really hard to ask them to be up for every game. And I know on paper we should kill them. Even on FIFA we should kill them. But again, these are real sports, right? The other team's a professional team. We had to go to Athens. They were ready. And we got, you know, we got a point. We didn't lose. And we move on. And we try to just focus on the game, the next game, and the next game, and the next game.
So thanks again, Victor, for that. Next comment came from Marcin. He got in touch with us on Facebook also, and he's talking about the wide gap between Barcelona and Real Madrid right now in the league, which is, I guess we could pull that out of the Schadenfreude files. So it's really enjoyable so far how the league is shaping up specifically with relation to Real Madrid. But Marcin says, since Real Madrid won so much lately, including back-to-back Champions Leagues, they probably need another challenge to get motivated. What if coming back from trailing by 10 points is just another one of their little let's break another record challenges? I'm kidding, of course. But something is not right about their slump that is almost too good to be true. And we also cannot take anything away from Barca that is very effective this season. So my initial thought on this is Zidane. You know, we've all seen how tough the job of managing is on our end at Barcelona, partially because the fans and the media are apparently, as I understand it, just so demanding and unrelenting. Every manager at Barca in the last 15 years or so has been kind of destroyed if they did it for more than a couple of years. And Zidane is nearing the end of his initial deal, and I wonder if he's getting a lot of the same kind of situation where he's just getting exhausted. And you know, he has all the talent that he could want, but I'm wondering if it's really more on Zidane's end, if he's just kind of running out of steam to do the job.
You know, it's funny because like last night we were watching the Madrid derby at a bar, and I was talking with my friends about what do you think is going on with Real Madrid, and my one friend said basically the young guys should be playing right now just to give some spark, some sort of cohesion, some sort of hope right now, and then plug in the players back. But I think the biggest problem right now with Zidane is he's really loyal to Benzema, and Benzema hasn't been looking all that sharp, and also Ronaldo hasn't been scoring. So with those, all those things combined, they're not able to win those games anymore. You know, before Ronaldo was having 2 goals a game, and Benzema was having an assist here or there, and Gareth Bale was not injured. So I don't know. They're, you know, always their main objective is Champions League. La Liga is kind of second or third. And, you know, Martin brings up a good point. Maybe it could be a challenge. But, you know, 10 points, you know, in the last 2 years, Barca and Real Madrid have both qualified better than 90 points in La Liga. So it's really, really difficult to come back from 10 points. And if Barcelona keeps their margin, Real Madrid's going to have no hope, and they'll just have to focus directly on the Champions League. But like I said, it could be Zidane just, you know, running out of steam. But also, I think he's kind of too loyal to the old guys still, you know, like Benzema, even Ronaldo. Like Ronaldo last night looked like shit. Like he looked terrible because, you know, when you're that type of player as a number nine, you also have to be good at passing. And I wouldn't put him as a great passer. And as you can see last night, I thought it was a very boring game. And I think Zidane can do a little bit more to tactically change things. But, you know, I'm not a Real Madrid fan, so good riddance. I'm glad he's having a difficult time now.
Yeah, absolutely. We all are. All right. So thanks again, Marcin. That was a good one. And our last one for now came from Zach, also on Facebook. He says, hi, guys. Just a discussion topic. Do you think that having a player like Messi, parentheses, G-O-A-T, and the pressure of the club to maximize its limited time with a player of his caliber has actually stunted our youth development and La Masia? For example, having a win-now mentality in the transfer window and focus on buying first-team-ready players rather than developing and giving a player like Alenia and others time to work into the team, and will that hurt us? Thanks, guys.
So I thought this was a really interesting question. This is always one of the kind of philosophies of the front office of any professional team. You know, you have these windows, and when you have a great player, greatest of all time, GOAT, like Messi, you have to win now because you never know when this window is going to happen again. So I'd rather have the philosophy of going for first team players now and trying to win as much as possible because we don't know what's going to happen when Messi retires. This is always a big kind of topic in NBA whenever you have like a best player like LeBron James or like my Warriors with Steph Curry right now. Like you have to go all in right now. And yeah, maybe have developing a back seat a little bit, but also you just never know when this window is going to happen. You know, like for example, like I'm a huge 49ers fan and they were amazing when I was a kid. And I thought that would never end. They haven't been to the playoffs in so long. They sucked for so long. They suck now. And so you never know when these windows are going to happen. When you have the greatest player of all time on your team, you want your front office to go all in and to actually try to win now because, like I said, we never know when this is going to repeat and how long it's going to take to get back to this type of, you know, where we're just winning every game and qualifying for champions. And it's just easy games. You know, we don't know when that's going to happen again.
That's true. I mean, on one hand, I think I'm definitely more of an idealist or a philosopher between us. I think you raise a really good practical point, which is that, you know, these kinds of scenarios where you have a player like Messi are so few and far between, so rare. I mean, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like this again in our lifetimes, because Messi is, as we've mentioned before, and as a lot of people have, you know, he's just from another planet. So it's not something that you can count on. And as far as that kind of eating into the opportunities for young up-and-coming players from La Masia, I mean, I think there's still been a pretty good record of La Masia players getting opportunities, maybe not quite as much as we would want. I think the real issue, if you're going to look at whether or not La Masia is contributing to the first team the way you want, is you got to look at the actual Masia, you know, how it's being managed, what kinds of players they're recruiting, because they don't have the same recruitment people or the same recruitment practices that they did 20, 30 years ago, even 10 years ago for that matter. So they're not exactly producing the same players out of the academy that they once did because of the way that they're running the academy. And whether or not that changes, I think will have more to do with whether those young players get more opportunities in the first team or not, because every manager has made at least some effort to give younger players opportunities. Valverde has already shown that he's interested in that. I think maybe he's playing it a bit safe sometimes, really, you know, going in with the best 11 all the time, but just trying to pull out those wins. But again, I think that point that you raised answers for that. You know, it's like we're in a unique window of time and we have to just take advantage of it while we can.
I mean, I think we'll see definitely with Alenia and Arnaiz, like what happens with them and their development. Now, if they just come into the team and very seamless transition, and they start to produce very at a high level, then we'll have a nice transition period coming from Messi, because those two guys could ultimately carry the team in the future as a tandem, you know? You know, like I said, I would rather have the board go for these wins now, this win now mentality, because I don't want to look back in the Messi era and said we could have won 20 as opposed to having won 10. You know, like, you don't want to leave anything left, because, like I said, we never know when we're going to see this type of player ever again, and let alone at Barcelona.
Absolutely. But really good question, Zach. That was a much appreciated comment. I didn't see that one coming, so good call on that. Now, before we get into our match reviews of the first team against Leganés, let's check in with Barça B and FCB Femení.
So the women crushed the team from Lithuania on aggregate 9-0. So they're going to advance, and for the third straight year, they're going to the quarters. I think they'll have the drawing soon, so we'll see where they end up. And they also, during the domestic league, they demolished Madrid, always nice, 7-0. Obviously, it's not associated with Real Madrid, but we can pretend they are, so it just makes us feel better. But also, just, you know, they're looking really, really good. Unfortunately, they lost today 1-0 to Tenerife. You know, that opens the door to Atletico trying to get some extra points here and be top of the table. But here you've highlighted a player, Bárbara, from FCB Femení. Why don't you tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah, so looking back to that Madrid CFF match, the 7-0 trouncing, there was one goal each from Lika Martins, Tony Duggan, and Andonova, but there were also four goals from Bárbara, and Bárbara actually made the assists on the other three. So I just want to highlight this player. She's a 24-year-old forward from Zaragoza. She came to Barcelona in 2015 after playing 2 years across town at Espanyol, and she usually comes off the bench, but in that particular match, she got the start, and so when she wasn't scoring, she was assisting, and there was one particularly good assist that she made for the Tony Duggan goal. So I would just say, check out Bárbara. She's really, like, fierce coming down that right side. Lika Martins coming down the left side. Tony Duggan up the center. It's a really formidable attacking force that they have, at least in that match. And that assist she had for Tony Duggan was, I think, really beautiful. Go watch the highlights on the FC Barcelona website. So yeah, and generally I was looking at their tactics, and they tend to really line up with a 4-3-3 as far as I can tell. It's a little difficult to tell just from highlights, and since the Champions Leagues are the only ones that are actually kind of broadcast that I can see, and they're only broadcast live, and I actually have things to do during the day on a weekday, so I can't watch Champions League matches. But it's interesting to see that they follow pretty much the same kind of model and philosophy as the first team on the men's side.
I mean, that really makes me happy. It's like plugging these women into the Barca philosophy of tactics, and also just getting really great players to play this style, you know? I think there's two things that are lacking for me for the FCB Femenine that would just kind of make me a little bit happier. I hope they sign an American player soon. I think that would be really cool, just for our kind of vested interest as both being Americans, as like someone to root for and have someone on the FC Femenine team. And the other thing too is, like, I wish on their website that they would do kind of a better job of updating the news. And I know they probably don't have the resources. They probably have interns doing it. But at the same time, like I find more information on their Twitter than on the actual page, right? On the page, like, they'll have like 3 days ago, maybe the game, you know, and they don't really have any type of write-up or anything like that. So I wish they could maybe get another intern, maybe something like this, and then like get some to put more news on there. Because like, since we're highlighting it and we're trying to find information, it's a bit difficult to find the highlights sometimes, and it's delayed, you know. I understand that aspect of the delayed highlight, but, you know, I just want to see a write-up from the team just right after the game, you know, just a little bit more than that. I mean, those are two really minor complaints, but again, unfortunately, they lost today. They left the door open for Atletico to be the leaders this weekend. It's a two-team race between Atleti and Barcelona. Again, they have 30 games this season, so still early in the season. They're going to be jockeying back and forth, so I'm not too worried. I'm more interested to see how far they get into the Champions this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping they can get past the quarters for sure. And, I mean, obviously, I hope they can just win the whole thing. I think with those two new signings, especially, though, with Lika Martins and Tony Duggan, I think they've definitely increased their quality and their ability to get results. So I think they could potentially go all the way or at least get to the final in the Women's Champions League this year. So let's shift gears slightly to Barca B. And actually, as we are recording this, Barca B is playing Rayo Vallecano. They're in the 77th minute at the moment, and Rayo Vallecano is up 1-0. So that's where it's at right now. If anything happens while we're recording, we'll keep you updated. But I don't imagine that the result is, I don't know. Maybe it'll shift back. But so right now, you know, we're recording this Sunday morning time. There's still some games to be played in the second division. But at the moment, Barca B are sitting at 16th in the table. They're 1 point behind Albacete and 2 points behind Nastic and Zaragoza, who have already played this week. So if they could somehow manage to get a win out of this game, which I'm not really seeing happening, they could potentially, you know, move up to 12th place, which is, you know, a lot more comfortable than 16th. I mean, again, we've talked about this over and over again. We don't require that they win the second division or even finish in the top four or five. If they can stay mid-table and just stay in the second division, we're happy, because it's really just about creating opportunities for the second team players to play, you know, more experienced and better sides who have had some first division experience. But it doesn't look good at the moment.
Definitely. And remember, like, Barca B is younger guys, you know, it's almost like a under 21 team. And for example, they're playing Rayo Vallecano, and those, they have players that are 28 years old, 30 years old, that have played in the first division before. So like you said, our main goal is just to stay in the second division, get more experience. We'll see if they can pull out a tie while we're recording and hopefully just kind of stay mid-tier table.
Yeah, we'll keep you posted, because there's a chance that the game will finish before we're done recording today. So this is like live radio, but actually not at all. You already know the result if you're paying attention. In any case, let's move on and shift to talking about La Liga, just a general review. Big news out of Madrid, the Madrid derby. Atletico drew Real in the Wanda, leaving both of them 10 points behind Barcelona. And as you've already mentioned, it was a bit of a boring game, but there was also a really fun highlight.
Ramos got kicked in the MF'n face.
Got kicked in the face!
Yeah, I watched this game with friends last night at the bar. There was an awesome environment at the bar, like always, for this Madrid derby. I was hoping for a 1-1 type of game, you know, at least see goals from both. Man, was it boring. Like, my friend was like, oh, it wasn't boring. I was like, no, it was super boring. Like, Atletico just went back. Real didn't really do anything. There wasn't that many chances. And as I posted on the Facebook group, I posted the cover of Marca today. And basically it says, the derby was won by Barca, which is great, right? So, you know, Barca won the game earlier. So, of course, Real Madrid or Atletico had all the pressure to get some points off of this, and they were unable to do that. So, for me, like, this game was super boring. And I just can't stand, you know, obviously Barca fan first and everything, but when Atletico plays Real Madrid, I hate the way they're so conservative. Like, they just need to bring it to Real Madrid. They can play with Real Madrid, but Simeone doesn't allow it, and it just creates this ugly counter-attacking football. And Real Madrid had most of the possession, but they couldn't do anything. Like we talked about, Benzema looked super slow, awful. All the people in the bar were just swearing at Benzema. It was hilarious to see this. They were just like, get this guy out of here, obviously in Spanish, right? And then also with Ronaldo too, like, it was funny. And yeah, so, you know, good news for Barca for sure on the derby last night.
Yeah, and there was also, I was seeing this online today about this one play where Ronaldo was in a straight foot race with Juanfran, and Juanfran beat him. So, I mean, there's definitely some talk that Ronaldo is losing some pace.
I mean, definitely. He's not a pacey, I mean, he hasn't been a pacey player in a while, you know. But the thing is like, you have these two guys at top, Benzema and Ronaldo, who are not scoring goals, and that's their main job, right? So now when they're not scoring goals, they can't get goals from anywhere else. You could see when they put Asensio in, it kind of changed the dynamic of the game a little bit, but still, Atletico's defense held tight. And of course, Oblak is just a beast as a goalkeeper. He is, you know, your prototypical what you want in a goalkeeper. Tall, strong. I mean, he doesn't take shit from nobody, you know?
Yeah, and he has great reflexes. Oblak is a serious goalkeeper, man. But also going on in La Liga, right now, again, as we record, Valencia, second place in the league, is playing Espanyol in Barcelona. It's halftime as we are recording, and it's tied at zero. So, again, if there are any fun developments that come up while we're recording, we'll let you know. I don't know how the scheduling is going to work with that. But, yeah, so they're playing in Barcelona. I'm hoping Espanyol can take two or three points off of Valencia, at least 2 points. Get a draw out of that would be nice. And we're going to get into this more later when we're doing the previews. But with Valencia being so close behind Barca, I imagine that, never mind this week, Valencia is going to come out hard on Barcelona next week.
Yeah, actually, Valencia just scored.
Oh, there it is. As I was speaking,
yes, Valencia just scored, so they're up 1-0. But yeah, Valencia is definitely going to bring it because they've been out of it for the last 4 years. They've been in such chaos with terrible managers and with the new ownership and everything that's been going on at the club. And now they're finally very competitive. They have a really good manager. They're playing really well. They are going to bring it. And plus, the Mestalla is going to be rocking. Those people have been waiting a long time to have an important game, and they're going to be ready for Barca for sure.
Yeah, and then rounding out the top five in the league, 12 points from the top is Sevilla. So, I mean, you know, you got Atletico and Real. They're only 10 points back. I shouldn't say only. They're 10 points back from Barcelona. But then Sevilla is only 2 points behind that. So they could still potentially vie for, you know, third, fourth place. I think they're definitely on track to be in Europe, but at the same time, I don't think they're making any threats to Barcelona at this point. And overall, talking about La Liga, you know, we have to assume that Barca will lose some points eventually, especially right now in the thick of the season with these injuries cutting into the squad. But at the moment, you know, it's a great start for Barcelona. They'd have to win the next 7 games to match that amazing 100-point year they had in 2012-13. Like, in the first 19 fixtures, they had won 18 and had one draw in that year. So far, we're on track to repeat that. But, you know, we're still, like I said, 7 games away from that. It's a big ask.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing, too, is, like, you know, we're tying points here and there, too, which is nice. So we're not losing games. We're still getting points at every opportunity. And like you said, we're not going to be able to win every match. That's just impossible. But we can strive for it, definitely. But again, La Liga is competitive. We're going to have Valencia. We have Madrid, Atletico. I mean, all these teams are going to continue to gun for us.
So let's talk about Leganés and review that match. So this took place in Madrid at the Butarque. The result was 3-0 Barcelona, so we got 3 more points. And you mentioned this, the 4 p.m. kickoff times are really tricky and weird. And tell me more about that. What's that about?
I mean, think about all the games that in the last 2 years or 3 years that we've had a 4 p.m. kickoff. They always start super slow. It was still sunny, so that was kind of weird as well. They're not used to playing these kind of, you know, I don't even know what you would call these games because it's not like daytime game. It's almost like day going into night game. But yeah, here in Spain, 4 p.m. is like siesta time, you know, especially on the weekend. Like, you go to lunch maybe with your friends, or you go have kind of a brunch, and then you come home at like 3 o'clock. And so the city is kind of dead around 3:30, 4 o'clock. That plays with your clock. You know, it's almost like you're in this routine of playing 8:45 at night. And then all of a sudden you have a 4 p.m. kickoff. I mean, it really kind of screws up with your routine. So if you notice, I remember last year they played at, where'd they play? I think they played at Celta Vigo at 4 o'clock. And again, they were really sluggish. I mean, if you just notice the 4 o'clock p.m. kickoff, they're always really super sluggish. Because again, the Champions League, and also the match of the week are always played at 8:45 p.m. local time here. That's the local time, match time.
Yeah, so that's a really weird time of day. And I think that away game against Malaga last year that they lost was also a 4 p.m. kickoff.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking of the Malaga. That was a good point. I was thinking of that game. And it's just, you know, it may not seem like a big deal, but it is a big deal. Like, 4 o'clock here just really feels really early. I don't know how to explain it. Like, even though, like, if I would say, I'm going to go meet you at 4 o'clock, I'd be like, oh my God, that's pretty early. How about 6?
So when I'm messaging you and I'm saying like, hey, could we record at 9 a.m. my time here in Buffalo, which is like 2 p.m, you're thinking like, oh, man.
I mean, like today, right? Like we were talking and I was like, hey, I'm going to lunch. And it's just kind of that time, you know, it's tricky. But anyway, they were able to, you know, after the first, maybe 25, 30 minutes or so, they were able to kind of get going. And especially once Leganés started shooting on goal, I think that kind of woke them up a little bit.
Yeah. Now, okay, so here's a message from the Leganés Tourism Board. It's actually not. That's just a joke. But if the Leganés Tourism Board wants to give us money to sponsor them on the podcast, we're more than happy to do that. So, you know, get in touch. But I love that Leganés are known as the cucumber growers. And apparently, you know, it's because the area is known for their garden markets and especially cucumbers. But where is Leganés in relation to IKEA, Gabriel?
So in relation to IKEA, it's on the opposite side, unfortunately. They're not in the same area. Leganés is in the southwest and IKEA is in the southeast of Madrid. I had to look up Leganés because I didn't even know where it was. And because even though I've lived here for so long, I'm so bad at the directions of the suburb cities of Madrid. Like all my friends would be like, oh, I work in Alcorcón. I'm like, is that east, west, north? What is that? So I had to look it up when you were asking me about this. And it's so funny because that cucumber growers, like no one would know that's why they're famous. That's such a like bullshit line. Like it's hilarious, you know? Like Leganés is where you go. Like where dreams die, right? Like that's where you go when you have kids and that kind of thing. Like that's the suburb kind of part of Madrid. So,
you're done living a vibrant life and you're just going to settle down and raise some kids, you move to Leganés.
Correct.
Yeah. Or Getafe, maybe.
Or Getafe.
Right. But at least Getafe has that cool dating app now. So you can hook up while you're at a Getafe game. But speaking of stadiums, actually, I was really noticing how small and intimate the Butarque is. It's like it's kind of like a large high school or like community college stadium. The stands don't even go up that high. And like, I love the Camp Nou and the excitement of all those people, but I would think that a stadium like Butarque would be a really cool place to watch Barca play an away game, you know, if you want to be close to the players.
Yeah, I mean, when I was looking at the notes yesterday during the match, when you wrote this, and I was like, oh yeah, that's a good point, because it definitely feels like it looks like a community college football field, right? Like it doesn't have the stands that are so high, but just enough to have a crowd. And like I was looking at the tickets because sometimes I forget like how close Leganés is to me, you know? Like I was like, I could have been, it's 20 minutes away. And I just didn't even think of like trying to go into the match. But since it is a small stadium, the tickets were going for 100 euros minimum. So a little bit outside my budget here. So I didn't go. But you know, watching the game up close like that, again, we've talked about it. It's almost like a minor league feel to it.
And it's, you know, wherever Barcelona goes, the tickets are just too expensive. There's no way to get around it, I don't think, unless, well, actually, if you go to a home game at the Camp Nou when they're playing some bottom of the table team, then the Camp Nou is like 29 euros. You're in for 29 euros, no problem. But yeah, if you wanted to go to the Butarque, like you've said many times with all of those kind of smaller clubs, especially ones with smaller stadiums, you know, that's like their Super Bowl. So they can really charge a premium for tickets. And it's a bummer, right? Because it would be so cool to get that close up to the Barca players and watch the game up close like that. But for, you know, working class guys like us, it's just not in the cards.
Also, they try to package the tickets too. So if you want to go to Barcelona, you have to buy 10 tickets at the same time. So they try to get you in that way. They, you know, they do that in American sports too, right? Like if you want, especially like in the NBA, like if you're in Atlanta and you want to see, let's say, LeBron James, then you have to buy the LeBron James game plus 10 other games so that they get the, you know, package deal. And that's what they do with these lower tier teams like Leganés, Eibar, like these type of teams. They package Barcelona or Real Madrid with 10 other games so that they'll guarantee having more people in the seats.
Yeah, that's actually a really good tactic. Well, anyway, let's talk about the game itself. So first up, let's talk about the lineup. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought it was a good lineup. You know, I was really happy to see Paco Alcácer getting the start. I thought he was going to bring a good level of energy, not only to the attacking, but also on defense. And then also, of course, Semedo starting. And when that happens, usually that means Rakitic is going to have a good game. Unfortunately, he didn't have his first 25, 30 minutes. He kind of, like I said, he looked like he was sleepwalking a little bit. But overall, I was really happy with the lineup. Did you have any points of contention with the lineup, or what were your thoughts on the lineup?
Well, I was a little bit surprised, actually, with the quality of the lineup. Just it was very much first string lineup. And I say surprised because, you know, I know that we have Juve coming up in 4 days, and that's going to be a big game. We're going to be asking for pretty much all the same players to start as started in this game. And Leganés are not a weak opponent by any means. You know, they're mid-table, and we saw a lot of quality coming from them, actually. I was actually even a little bit surprised with the quality that Leganés were bringing to the game. But in any case, when I first saw the lineup, I was also very happy to see Alcácer in there. I was sort of expecting that he would be more out to the left, but instead he was a little more on the right. But then again, you know, with the front three, there's so much rotation going on. But I was kind of, I guess, expecting or hoping that Alcácer would be more on the left side so that we could ensure that Suárez could be more in the center. It didn't exactly work out that way, but I was also happy to see him. And I mean, how can you not start Semedo at this point? Because, you know, with Sergio Roberto injured, you know, what can you do? But again, it's also a good thing because, yeah, like you said, we know that then, like, Rakitic should probably have a better game. And just Semedo's speed is ridiculous.
Yeah, and especially players who haven't played against him and then they see his speed, you can see their body language. You know, obviously I'm a body language expert, and, you know, I could just read their body language. They're just like, who is this guy that just came out of nowhere? Like the Flash, you know? Like, he just comes out of nowhere. And for example, like, I was never the fastest player, and I always hated playing against players that were super, super fast, because that just made you have to think even that much quicker when you got the ball. Because when you got the ball, like, all of a sudden this guy that's twice as fast as you, you have to already be ready thinking two moves ahead, and sometimes you just can't. And especially when you get tired, your legs get affected and you can't make those moves. But like I said, Semedo, seeing him start made me happy. He didn't play very well, you know, for the most part of the game, but he did enough to, you know, lock down everything on defense for Barca.
Yeah, defensively he did really well, and he likes to get forward, but I was noticing a lot of times when he was getting in more forward positions, he was kind of all alone out there. He didn't have any real support out on the right side, so he would have to either play it back or somehow try and work a throw in or something like that, or just play it back. So I felt bad for him, because a lot of times when he was getting forward, he didn't have anyone to, like, combine with to, like, make a play. So it was, I don't think that, like, tactically it was working out in his favor, but I don't think that was necessarily all on him.
And then talking about Alcácer and Suárez and Messi, it was almost like a 4-4-2 lineup, in that Suárez and Paco Alcácer were kind of interchanging, because in the second half, Alcácer was on the left side, for example, when the goal was scored by Suárez. So they were almost kind of interchanging left and right, which I think really helped Suárez, because he wasn't just focused on one side. He can kind of crisscross with Alcácer, and Messi obviously in the middle, making the pass, directing the traffic and doing the attacking. So it was almost kind of like a mixed 4-3, 4-4-2 hybrid type of thing, which I think for Suárez suits him, that he can kind of float left side, right side, depending on where. But again, I cannot stand this again. Last time I checked, he's a professional football player. How many times is this guy offsides? Like, seriously.
You know, there was one in particular where I was stunned. I was genuinely stunned with just, like, how lazy he was in paying attention to his positioning. And the positioning was such that had he been onside, I think he would have gotten a goal. He would have been in open field. He would have had a clear shot. He would have gotten a goal. But he was just, like, spaced out, or just, like, a really, really dumb offside that he allowed to happen. One in particular. But yeah, I don't even know how many times he was called offside. But there was that one made me really, I won't say mad, because I don't want to admit to being that emotionally, like, caught up in it. But I didn't like it.
I did not like it. But the thing is, like, you know, I'll just give you my example. Like, when I was 12 years old playing, like, in this travel team and so forth, I was playing like a striker. And I remember one game I got offsides 4 times in a row. Like, you know, just like 4 attacking. I ruined the attack because I was offsides. And at that point, I didn't really kind of know what offsides was, because it was a gray area. And then my dad explained to me, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to let this happen again. That is my priority, is to stay onside and to try to let the attack continue. I just can't get this guy because, like, he's always offsides. And I know he's trying to do these amazing runs, but all he has to do is just, like, do a quick turn on his left shoulder to see where he's on the line or not. Like, it just baffles me. It just baffles me. Like, there was a couple plays, like, he's there for the taking, but if he just would have waited, like, one step sooner, like, he would be fine. But, of course, he just doesn't see the last line. It just drives me crazy. That's – and obviously his biting. But other than that, you know, what are you going to say?
Yeah, yeah. Just so disappointing. Just stay onside. Like, don't even worry about scoring goals. If you could just stay onside, not get – if you could just have one match where you don't get called offside once, I think we would be absolutely stoked.
Exactly. That would be – he would, if he didn't get offsides one time, he would be my man of the match. Guarantee that, okay? My man of the match other than Messi. But the other thing too is, like, for example, in the third goal. The third goal is a perfect demonstration of keeping the attack alive when the first run failed, right? When the first run failed, but they kept kind of attacking. There was slop and all this. But again, if that first run was called offsides, we don't have that opportunity. And so that's what Suarez just kind of has to – okay, he got out of his drought to, you know, yesterday, but he just needs to focus on just keeping the attack alive by keeping onside.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Messi, and you mentioned also how we're both experts in nonverbal communication. And so I want to bring this point up. We're actually really experts in all things related to the psyche of a footballer. That much is clearly true. So what can we say about the relative absence of Messi in this match? Now, here's what I mean. Leganés were playing generally very tight up the middle of the pitch. They were succeeding in closing down any space for Messi to operate. So I'm not putting this all on him. I think Leganés went out of their way to try and shut him down and close down space so that he couldn't operate. And I think they were generally pretty successful at that, particularly in the first half. And that started to They started to open up more in the second half, and that's when we saw the goals start coming. But he also seemed a bit subdued, again, especially through the first half, and then he came alive in the later stages of the game. Particularly, that goal from Paulinho was really only because of Messi's brilliance and tenacity, which was a crazy goal. But let me get into that goal in just a minute. But what are your general thoughts about, you know, what's your expert's opinion on Messi's psyche in this match?
Well, it's funny because my father, Gonzalo Quiroga, he messaged me during the game. He's like, "Where's Messi?" And I'm just like, "Dude, just calm down. Like, I don't like Messi can have a game where he's not the, you know, he's not the best player out there, but he did enough in the game where we won the game." And so sometimes, especially, you know, he just played during international break, you know, just kind of easing into the match. Now, I think he's just getting psyched up for Juve, and I think he'll come out guns blazing for the Juve match. But again, I think the better thing coming out of this is Suarez getting out of the drought. I think that is the most important thing, because now we have – if he starts to score, then all of a sudden we have some more balance in our scoring and we're not just depending on Messi. So, for example, last year, if Messi would have had this game, do we win the game? That's the question, right? Like, that's kind of how we're judging from this season to last season. And for me, it's like – Messi didn't have the greatest game, but we still came up with the result, and we won 3-0 in an away game, 4 p.m. match. Like, that's perfect for me. I'm happy with everything on that.
Yeah. Now, before we get into our men of the match other than Messi, and actually, even if we put Messi in the running, I wouldn't actually give him man of the match this week. But again, that's fine. He is actually human, even though we talk about how he's from another planet. He is actually a human being. So, you know, sometimes he'll not have the most brilliant match. But I do want to talk about that one goal, that crazy goal in the 89th minute, the third goal from that Paulinho actually put away. And just I want to highlight how this break broke down. So Vidal, he comes down the right. Rakitic plays it to him. He plays it to Suarez, who makes like an ill-advised dummy, or he wasn't aware of the defender coming up. He was trying to leave it for Messi, but Ruben Perez got a foot on it, but it wasn't a full foot. It was only a half foot. Messi still manages to get hold of the ball. He plays it out to Jordi with like four men swarming around him. So even getting that pass off was impressive. And then he runs into the box for the return. He takes the shot. It's blocked. He gets the rebound and he's walking the ball on the touchline like a tightrope. He falls to the ground, still manages to make a pass. And then Paulinho just pokes it in with his toe. And this has given me the idea to come up with a new exclamation. Oh my goat. So it's like, oh my God, but it's
yes,
goat.
Yes, I like it. I get it. It's good. And again, It's my favorite player of the year so far. Paulinho coming up aces with another goal. You know, I can't believe this guy. This guy's my favorite player now. I'm going to get a Paulinho jersey for Christmas. But you know, that goal was like almost like a perfect hockey slop goal. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's just like where sticks are poking and you know, you don't even know where the puck is. And all of a sudden, boom, it's in the net. And that's what it felt like when I was watching it. You're seeing all the action. You're seeing all this going on. Then all of a sudden, you see Paulinho, you know, just stuck out his big toe. And there it goes in the back of the net. And yeah, so great. So again, Paulinho coming in as a second half substitute, I think that really suits him because, like we've always talked about, his physicality, he has an attacking prowess, aerial presence, all these things that in the second half, if you're playing defense for 80 minutes against Barcelona, and all of a sudden Paulinho comes off the bench and on a corner kick, you got to defend him. It's like the last thing you want to do. So again, I was pretty happy with the substitutions for the most part, except for Vidal coming. I wasn't too thrilled about that. I mean, just let Semedo play a full match.
I know. I was actually chatting with one listener during the game on Instagram, and he had the same sentiment. You know, like why is he taking Semedo off? And I said maybe he's trying to rest him for Juve. And his response was, rest him from what? All the training he's been doing? Like, I don't know, man. Like, Valgrin makes some really curious rotational decisions and substitute decisions sometimes, but he does keep getting results. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, we can't. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, we talked about before. The only thing that we are, you know, questioning about Valgrin are just, like, a couple substitutions here. We're living the life right now, you know? Think about all the other, like, top-tier teams, you know? They have chaos going on. Like, you talk about Chelsea or Arsenal or Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. Like, they have more problems this season than we do. Our only thing right now is, like, oh, Semedo's not playing the full 90, but we're still getting results left and right, which is very, very impressive.
And, again, we have to raise a glass to Suarez for scoring two goals, breaking his drought. So, you know, hopefully we're going to see more goals from Suarez in the near future, and hopefully he's feeling better both physically and mentally as the away hell continues. But so let's get into man of the match. Who was your man of the match, Gabriel?
My man of the match was Paco Alcácer. I think he provided the energy that was needed for yesterday's type of match. He was involved in the two goals, especially the first one where he kind of just threw it against the goalkeeper. And since there was traffic, the goalkeeper couldn't hang on to the ball. And of course, Suarez poached it in. I think that him also just, he just looks hungry, right? Since he was involved in both goals, I think that just adds to him playing more and giving him more confidence. And again, in the second goal, he was involved. He almost did the same thing where he, you know, had a nice strike against the goalkeeper. The goalkeeper couldn't hang on to it and Suarez pounced on the rebound. So again, I think Paco's energy, not only on the attacking, his speed, he's more direct, right? Like when we talk about Deuces playing on the right wing, he's always trying to dance. And I think Alcácer is got the poacher's mentality. He's looking for the goals. And when he's in, we're scoring the goals. So that for me was the man of the match other than Messi. What do you think of Paco's performance?
I thought Paco did a great job. And I really like the way that he sort of changes the complexion of the attack, and I like actually having him and Suarez out there as well. So, you know, that does change a little bit what we would expect from the lineup because that gives us zero wingers. But on the other hand, if we're asking the midfielders and the fullbacks to come forward and operate in a role similar to that, then I think Paco and Suarez working together is, I think, working actually pretty well, and we should see more of it.
So I think overall, I think I'm really happy with Paco's performance lately. I think he's given a nice balance to Suarez up top. So Suarez isn't double teamed up there. So I think overall, I like the progression of Paco in the last games. Brian, who was your man of the match other than Messi?
T.S. Eliot, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen was my man of the match. And my man LRock88 on Instagram is with me on this. And there was actually a tweet that you put into our show notes from FC Barcelona, which I think just says it all. You know, they point out he played 90 minutes, he completed 21 passes, made 9 recoveries, and actually led the team in recoveries. He made 7 saves, conceded 0 goals. It's his 8th clean sheet of the season. And the final point is that he's the man. So Ter Stegen is definitely the man. You know, you cannot discount or undervalue the contribution he made in that game to keep the sheet clean and make those three goals count for a win.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good choice. And I love this tweet because, you know, it has the green checks, the green check mark. So it's like 90 minutes played, check, 21 completed passes, check, you know. But again, he made a crucial save after Barcelona were up 1-0. There was like a clear line where the Leganés player had a shot on goal, curved it, and Ter Stegen read that perfectly. And, you know, if Leganés scores that goal, who knows? It could be a totally different game. But Ter Stegen, I think for me, has raised his game another maybe 15 to 20% from last year. I think he just looks super confident, leading the team. And also, dude, that's crazy. Like, 21 completed passes as a goalkeeper. And of course, they weren't just little short passes. You know, there was a couple there where he just dinks and dunks them perfectly to the midfield. I mean, for me, you know, Ter Stegen has been a revelation this season. I think also, since Valgren is putting more emphasis on defense, it's shining more on Umtiti, Ter Stegen, and Piqué and Busquets as a, I'm going to start calling them the battery, just like in baseball, the battery, as a really, really strong battery, probably the strongest battery in world football right now. You can't argue with the stats, and having these zero goals conceded are just giving us more confidence, especially when we have to play these big games.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other little comment from a listener. This came from Schnarfen on Instagram about this exact issue with Ter Stegen. He says, I know from personal experience as a goalkeeper how scary one-on-one situations can be, and I just have to show admiration for how Ter Stegen handles each and every situation. Also, good to see Luis Suarez looking dangerous after his international break vacation. Thanks, Schnarfen, for that. Although, to be fair, Suarez was not on vacation. He wasn't playing in any matches, but he was training that whole time. He was in the sand pit. You know, they made a video. They put a video on the website, so that's how you know he was working, right?
Exactly. You know, anytime I want to make sure that I'm working, I put my video out there as well. But, you know, like we talked about, Ter Stegen has just been money this season. And, you know, if we compare the last two seasons, you know, Ter Stegen was solid, but he always, this is the game where we would have won 2-1 or 3-1. We always conceded a goal. And I think Valgren's tactics of emphasizing defense more first, because, you know, we're always going to be able to score. But if we can hold down the fort on defense and then focus on our attack, you can see the results so far. I mean, how can you argue so far? I mean, we look like yesterday, the game scared me. As soon as I saw the kickoff and the way they started playing, I was like, uh-oh, this is like Malaga again. But again, these are the type of games that are, you have to, these are going to be, you know, a slugfest, and you're going to have to pull them out, and they were able to do that.
Yeah, and I think we actually really have to thank Paulinho for it. You know, again, I think we figured out which fathead we need to put up on your wall in your apartment. I think it's going to be Paulinho.
Do you think I should do like Paulinho, like Andy Warhol style? So it looks
absolutely. I think there should be a whole grid of like nine, at least four, right? Because that's the standard Andy Warhol.
Exactly.
Least four Paulinhos in different color hues. Yeah, for sure.
Should Paulinho also be flipping me off at the same time? I think so.
Because you gave him a lot of shit early on.
I did.
And now
I did.
You've made a 180-degree turn on
Correct.
Paulinho.
But that's what makes me such a great human. I'm adaptable. I can change my opinion. I'm not stuck in these certain things. If you show me the light, I will follow you, you know? So Paulinho, you have done very well so far this season. I think he's been, just like Ter Stegen, another revelation. You know, obviously Valgren knew what he wanted with Paulinho. And I think also the way he's using him, you know, spot starts and then also coming in, just like we said before, almost like a Keita 2.0. Like, he's a better attacking version of Keita, just maybe a little bit more physical and a better aerial presence. And just like we've also used the comparison of like in baseball, when you bring in a closer, you bring those fresh legs, Paulinho, especially in the middle of the field. There's a couple times where he took the ball almost coast to coast and Leganés didn't have the legs to compete with him, to run with him. So again, Valgren just pushing all the right buttons. My only thing is I just want to see Semedo more and complete the 90 minutes because I think he needs that.
Yeah. And also the most important thing is that you're the bigger man. Is that, you know, you were willing to change your opinion. That's the really the important takeaway from all of this, is that you're the bigger man.
Thank you, Brian. I'm always trying to be a Renaissance man, a man in touch with my feelings, a man that's always, you know, adaptable to different situations, and this is no different. So, you know, I can admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong about Paulinho. So, like I said a couple podcasts ago, I was happy to see him start. And now when I see him, I feel very good that we're going to win the game.
Yeah, if you want to track the history of that, go to episode 50, and you can hear the moment that Gabriel changed his mind and actually said he was happy to see Paulinho in the lineup. But anyway, let's preview some matches. So first match coming up this week, of course, is going to be in the Champions League against Juventus in Allianz Stadium in Turin. And we, you know, usually like to now highlight players to watch. And for me, with Juve, honestly, the player to watch from our perspective is Buffon. He's just one of the toughest goalkeepers. He's still such a great goalkeeper, very tough to score against. How are we going to deal with, even if you get past the defensive lines, how do you beat Buffon?
I mean, especially now going to Turin, they're going to get more of the calls in their favor. And of course, you know, as typical Italian teams play, it's going to be more physical. It's going to be almost playing like an Atleti game, almost like a Premier League game. So they're going to have a little bit more advantageous calls for them. I mean, we just have to come with our game. I'll be interested to see if Paulinho gets the start on this. I kind of would like to see Paulinho start and, you know, match that physicality, because again, we didn't have Paulinho last year, and I think that's what we were lacking in the midfield. We have to bring it to Juventus, and I think they'll be focused, especially from last year getting walloped and just trying to become top of the table. If they win tomorrow, or if they win against Juventus, I think they can coast the rest of the time. And so that'll be an important match. You know, obviously we'll be watching, and, you know, again, we'll see how it turns out. I would be perfectly happy with a 1-1 or a win. I'm, you know, if we lose 1-0, that's going to be difficult in the future. But again, playing in Turin at that stadium against Buffon, like you said, who's been a goalkeeper for what, 40 years or something? 40? I mean, he was with the Italian national team like last week when they failed to qualify, and he's been a goalkeeper since like 1996 or something crazy like that. Like, insane. So he is the wall back there. And of course, Messi had a long scoreless streak against him, but he was able to break through that last time. And hopefully Messi can have another big game for us.
Yeah. And as far as players to watch on Juventus, on the attacking side of Juventus, you know, Dybala, of course, is going to be one to watch. He's scored 13 goals for Juve this season. But also Pjanic, their assist leader, is one to watch also. So he's going to be in the midfield. He's going to be looking to make assists. He's going to be looking to dish it off to Dybala to put the goals away. So those are also some players to watch for Juventus. And then the other match coming up this week, we've already hinted at this. We've talked about it already, but let's get into it in a little bit more detail. Next Saturday, I believe, in La Liga, Barcelona are going to be going to the Mestalla, a formidable place to go to play Valencia, who are in second place. And at the moment, let's check in. Gabriel, how's Valencia doing at this moment against Espanyol?
So it's a final. Valencia won 2-0.
Ah.
Yeah.
So that keeps Valencia within 4 points of Barcelona. So worst case scenario, Barcelona will still stay on top at the end of La Liga next week. But in any case, that's not great. But the big things that we got to worry about are the fact that Piqué is not going to be able to play. He's going to be on yellow card suspension, which means Vermaelen is going to get the start, right? Because Mascherano's injured, as we talked about earlier. So obviously Vermaelen's going to get the start. And I think that's actually a good reason why Paulinho should also start, to try and help Vermaelen on a slightly more defensive end, or, you know, have maybe Paulinho and Busquets kind of trading and helping out in the center, because I don't fully trust Vermaelen.
Oh, you don't?
No.
What do you trust more, Vermaelen or one of those car chasing lawyers? You know, car accident chasing lawyers. Like, dude, like, I was reading Twitter where it was like, we have Vermaelen playing. I was like, I'd rather have cones or a bag of balls playing defense. You know, at least they're stagnant and they're always going to be there. I mean, Vermaelen for me playing in a big game like this scares the shit out of me. Seriously. I was just kind of thinking in my head, what if he did something like, you know, Jordi Alba, Umtiti, Semedo, Vidal as a back line.
I'd be down for that.
Or even have Busquets playing center back and Paulinho, because then you just kind of have Busquets floating in. And I don't know. Like, I don't know how much trust Valgrin has in Vermaelen. But again, also, this match is a La Liga match. It's away at Valencia. He might just use Vermaelen and just say, you know, we just go play and that's it and see what happens. Because, you know, you just try to get the points. And if you can't, oh, well, if we lose, it's not a bad loss. You know, it's not like losing in Eibar or something like this. This is going to be a highly contested game. And like we said, we can't win every game. And this could also just be a throwaway game just to kind of break the streak, you know, because one of the things, too, is when you streak for so long, like when you start winning like post 20 games, then it puts a lot of pressure, right? And so maybe it might be good to have a reset and you put Vermaelen in there and you say, okay, Vermaelen, just go play. We'll give PK a break and we'll just play with our best 11 that we think, and we'll just go with the best options and just go play and see what we can do instead of trying to be so nutty professor with the tactics and trying to be like outsmarting yourself.
Right. Or could he possibly bring up a player from the B squad? Would he do that?
That's interesting. If I were the manager, I wouldn't do that. I just think there's just too much on the line. And I think you just kind of, you have Umtiti back there and you're just hoping that he can communicate well with Vermaelen, because obviously they speak French. So maybe that's also a nice thing. No, I'm serious, bro. You're laughing. You're laughing, but
no, you're right. It's a good point.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know how good Vermaelen's Spanish is, right? But I know Umtiti's French is pretty darn good, right? And Vermaelen is Belgian. So that communication could also be key, you know? So they could have a really good communication, especially since they're speaking in their native tongue. Again, I would just roll out Vermaelen and just take our chances with that. I think he'll be decent enough to be formidable as a defender, especially if we have Semedo and Alba back there. I think we should be okay.
Yeah, and this is all assuming that Vermaelen doesn't injure himself this week during training.
That is correct. Maybe he's like getting out of the car. He's like, oh, no, my hamstring, you know, and then he's out.
Which
and
could
then,
happen with Vermaelen, you know?
I know. He is Mr. Glass.
Yeah. But, I mean, talking about Valencia in general, you know, that their new manager that they got this year, Marcelino, man, he has totally just picked Valencia up from the gutter and brought them back to life this year, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Marcelino was a great manager at Villarreal, and he had them competing at a high level. He had to take the year off because he quit the team in September last year, so he couldn't coach for any other Liga team. And so I think he did a good job so far with Valencia. He has them playing in a really nice formation. They're not playing too many midweek games, so he has them rested and playing really well. Again, we just saw they pull out another victory today, 2-0, very impressive. And, you know, Marcelino will have some tricks up his sleeve for sure.
Yeah, now I have a couple of players to watch on my list for Valencia. I have a short list. Do you have a short list of players to watch from Valencia?
No, for me, the most important for me is Marcelino. I mean, I think that's the most important because he knows Barcelona pretty well. He's matched up with them so often. I think he's brought Valencia out of the gutter. You know, he's changed the roster, and the players he's picked are playing at their best level in years. So who are some of the players you highlighted?
Well, the main one that I'm going to have my eye on is actually Dani Parejo, the midfielder. And it seems like he's been at Valencia for so long. He's like one of those kind of like mascot players for Valencia. And of course, we've seen how last year, year before, you know, Valencia were not doing well. They were in just complete disarray, bad management, absentee owner, no one real steady or anyone you could count on the coach's bench. But again, you know, like the point you raise about Marcelino is how he's like really marshaled this group together and he's getting good performances out of them. And Dani Parejo is, I think, the playmaker in the squad. He's the free kick taker. He's the guy to look out for. But then also, you know, you got to keep your eye on Rodrigo. He's their second best goal scorer, but their top goal scorer is injured right now. So those are the guys I'm going to be watching.
I mean, I think that's a really good list. And again, Marcelino has them playing, you know, like the best they've played in years. And just like you highlighted, the manager situation they've had the couple of years was complete chaos. They had what's his name? Gary Neville. I think it's Gary Neville.
Yeah.
He didn't even speak Spanish. Like, are you kidding me? Like, how is this guy going to coach? Like, you have to, like, know some sort of the language to communicate because all the players don't speak English here, you know? And that was just complete chaos. And, of course, the ownership fired. I mean, I think in the last four seasons they've had three different managers or four even. So, I mean, that's just complete chaos. And but now Marcelino has turned the ship. And, again, playing in the Mestalla is a really difficult stadium. That's going to be the 12th man, basically. And it's a tight field as well. So again, it's like we talked about, putting Barcelona in a telephone booth, you're going to have a better chance of beating them because they can't spread you out so far. So that's going to be a difficult thing to watch as well.
Yeah. Now, before we close out the show today and do our outro, just a quick update. The Barca B match has finished and they wound up losing to Rayo Vallecano 1-0. Of course, if you're listening to this on Monday or later, you already know that. But in case you're not, you know, keeping your ear to the ground on Barca B, just wanted to say, unfortunately, they couldn't pull out a draw with Rayo. So bad news, but we'll pick back up with them next week. That's it for this week, folks. Be a part of the show. Give us your comments, questions, topics you'd like us to discuss. Find your preferred method of contact at BarcaTalk.net. And don't forget to rate, review, and spread the word about BarcaTalk to your friends and subscribe. Thanks for listening. I am Brian Henderson.
I'm Gabriel Quiroga.
And this is BarcaTalk. Thanks for listening again. Visca Barça.
Visca el Barça.